It's Wednesday, January 19th, 2011, and you're listening to episode 218 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 6 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
We flipped Dan's dice to 1 and it screwed up the podcast.
Yeah, we're on day 2 of this episode because the die that I keep set to 20 to appease the hoodoo gods Chad flips it to a 1 and then the sound quality all goes haywire on the recording. And he is trying to convince me there's no correlation.
Dice here is still on 6. This D6 is on 6.
The statistics are perfect. 100% of the time, you have this set to 1, the recording failed. This is a proven fact.
Yes.
It's going up on Wikipedia.
Totally.
All right, so who else is here with me?
I'm still Wayne.
Pat, I think. Yeah. We're not sure.
Pat. What?
We even had the Pat soundboard on the episode.
They have missed out on a new addition to the Pat soundboard.
Yeah, the hell yeah on the Pat soundboard. Never again.
It's lost. It's been taken away.
Fortunately, we have...
Thanks, Dan.
Fortunately, we have the really tried and true part of the Pat soundboard, which is...
He's going to go back to this well. Because he thought it was so good the first time around.
A cup full of ice. Yeah. And since 1 isn't enough, you now have 2 cups of ice in front of you.
Yeah, I'm thirsty. Get over it.
You can't even just have like 1.
It's not even.
Well, that was
like
empty. I'll go get more.
A drink of water. It's just ice.
Well, yeah,
it's just
I'll tell you what. I'll do this. I'll fill that one up between now and take 3.
Yeah, flip Wayne's to 1, and then we'll do a take 3.
Pat's going to show up here one day with a cup full of ice, a rattlesnake, and firecrackers.
Best episode ever.
You know, I'm just pumped because we're all at the mics together. I haven't been recording with you guys in over a month now at this point.
Who are you?
Uh-oh. Who let this guy in?
Wayne's a little behind schedule.
Uh-oh.
So, on the list of things that we are excited about outside of Wayne's pregnancy, I am pumped up for March Fear the Con 4 is coming up. Yes. Looking at the early numbers, both in terms of the games.
I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm really curious how you're going to answer it now.
Okay.
Because you're very, very big on honesty.
Okay.
Do you know how many games I'm running? Because I asked him in the first episode, and he didn't know.
2.
He tells the truth. Yes. I'm running 2 games now.
Which is twice as many as the last time you talked about it when you were running 1.
Yes.
I'm still on the same thing I've been doing for the past 2 or 3 of these, which is I'm running 4, playing in 2.
Yes.
And I have yet to post the last one. I just posted game 5 right before
Dinobots.
This recording. Yeah, the Dinobots
one. Is that
one
filled up already? Because people are like ravenous over that.
No, there's like 1 or 2 slots still left. And then I've got to decide what I want to run for my 4th and final game. And I've got several ideas.
You know what you should do? You should do something like different for you. I'll lend you my Jenga tower. You can do something weird with it.
You know, one of the things I'm thinking about is I could take another... like Star Trek game, just because it holds a large number of people and it's relatively easy to run. And given the fact that
and
we have a...
people love it.
Well, yeah, it is a great game. And given the fact that we have a convention to plan, the easier the games are to prep, the better for me.
Mm-hmm.
I've considered doing something a little out of my usual repertoire, like a Dread game or a Fiasco game or something like that. I'm also considering doing something completely off the wall, like a Shadowrun LARP outside around the playground.
Oh, and so, cops are coming. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Where can I sign up to vote for you to do that?
The St. Charles cops already love me as it is. So,
yes.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm going to put one more up and I will put it up in February. I'm sticking to what I said I'd do, which is I'm trickling them out at the rate of 1 a month.
Yeah.
Just dropped the January game. So there's going to be one more getting dropped in February, but the early numbers are shaping up to be good number of games. The only thing we got to say is if you are not coming, then get your ass out there. If cash is the problem, there's both a carpooling and a room sharing thread that have been started. I will link to both in the show notes, so there's a good chance you can find somebody to help split the cost with you. And if you are willing to run a game, we are certainly always happy to take more game masters. We've always got prize support for people that will man up and run a game.
Or woman up.
But the one request we would have is, as of right now, and this could change by the time the show drops because there's a 1 week lag, slot six is looking a little bit slim. So if you're interested in running a game and would be willing to do it in slot six, we could use some help rounding it out.
Yeah, and just because we're trickling games out, that doesn't mean we need you to trickle games out.
Well, and I guess also another thought on this is just go and look at the activities list. Because if by the time this drops, I don't know, slot two is the short one. Mm-hmm. Just put the games wherever you can help us round things out so we don't have all kinds of stuff going on and really, you know.
Or just put games out there. We'll give you free stuff.
You know, or hell, just show up. We just love to have you. Mm-hmm. Fear the Con 1-3 have all been absolute smashing successes. And all the early signs show that Fear the Con 4 is going to be just stellar as well. And as with previous years, probably sometime in maybe about a month before the convention, we'll drop a bonus episode that will have a lot of the nitty gritty that we haven't given to this point. But
it will have both nitty and gritty.
Yes. Like the one thing you need to know now is that it's going to be badass. You need to be there and you will regret it if you're not.
Right.
All righty. So here we sit at the start of a new year. This show will drop mid to late January-ish. And I want to talk about what we are looking forward to in 2011.
Not dying.
This is not a New Year's
big thing for me.
Resolution sort of thing, but it's just more, there's a lot of movies, video games, et cetera, coming out in 2011. This is a good year to be a geek. Not as good as 2012 when we get Dark Knight Rises, but nonetheless, 2011 is the second best year to be a geek. And so I'm curious what you guys are looking forward to in 2011, and obviously we'll talk to the guys here on the mics, but you guys listening, hop on the forums and you tell us what you're looking forward to.
I got nothing.
Batman Arkham City.
Arkham City's on my list as well.
I refuse to buy Arkham City, besides the fact that I'm poor and I'm a cheap bastard. My problem with Arkham Asylum was that it was a great game that was $60 that was 5 hours long. And I'm sure they're going to fix that in Arkham City. I'm sure it's going to be longer and more worth it, but I narrowly avoided getting burned by that the first time.
Well,
so.
I rented it, so I also didn't.
I borrowed it from Dave.
Can I ask you this question, though?
Yes.
I totally understand your concern that the game playing only 10 or 20 hours was probably not worth the cost.
It was 5 hours. I didn't do all the achievements.
I did all the
achievements.
I did all the extras, and it took me a little bit longer.
I played the whole game. I did some side stuff. I did the Riddler challenges. I didn't blast through to the end. But I didn't get all the chivies.
I did it in 3 days while working.
Yeah.
So it was I come home after work, I play it.
I beat it in 5 hours.
Yeah, I'm not an achievement whore. I missed a lot of the achievements, but I did do all the side stuff. I did the Riddler quest.
I did a large.
But here's my question, though. Accepting your issue with the price point, and we take it from the standpoint you're going to either rent or borrow the game, is this something you're looking forward to in 2011? Because you got to admit, despite its shortness, Arkham Asylum was a badass game.
Yeah, it was incredible.
They did an excellent job of capturing what it is like to be Batman. The sneaking around and freaking the enemies out and watching them slowly panic.
I'm totally down with that. I am really looking forward to it. I really want to watch it. It was very interesting in that it combined the sort of gritty realism of the new Batman movies, not the silly ones, the good new ones, Christopher Nolan ones, with the unrealism of the comic books. You have Poison Ivy with her plant powers.
Actually, you know what
Killer
it struck
Croc
me as?
And all that.
It was the animated series without the kids cartoon rating.
Right.
Because they basically took the exact same cast. They took some of the people that were responsible for writing and producing the animated series. They used the same characters, Harley Quinn having been an invention of the animated series. And what they did was they told very similar stories, except they no longer had to keep it rated for an afternoon cartoon on the WB. Mm-hmm. They could now cut loose and have a PG-13 or maybe even
have you seen Red Mask yet?
Yes, I have.
That's not shown in
that's
the
not
afternoon
one
on
the
TV.
No, it's not. No, it's not. But you've seen it.
Yes,
did you like it?
Oh, yes, I did.
It's very good.
That's actually one of the things I'm excited about, to see what DC is going to do next video-wise this year. They've got the new Young Justice cartoon that is really good so far. Last year, there was a string of these movies that were just incredible. Red Hood being probably the
Red
best
Hood,
example
Red Hood,
of it.
Redman. Yes, Red Hood.
Yeah, I've got three or four of those that I actually went out and I purchased them on online, and I watched the Red Hood. I have two or three left that I need to watch. I'm really looking forward to those. Most of them are sort of Batman centric, though, for me.
Yeah, so. there was Batman, Superman, a couple of those.
Yeah,
there were a couple other like Superman ones.
It's not is it Apocalypse? I forget. Dooms or was
Batman,
it Doomsday?
Superman, Apocalypse?
Yeah, that's one of the ones I've got to watch as well.
All right, so my other three video games: Zelda, Skyward Sword. Love Twilight Princess. It could suck, but if they can really do a good job with this, I'm really looking forward to it.
I should be really excited, but I haven't heard anything about it.
I haven't seen any video or anything about it. I want to be excited.
Yes, I will totally admit that. I have not seen a whole lot on the game, which is why I leave the caveat. It could suck. But with Twilight Princess, I thought they did just such an excellent job of making a game for the Wii that was, one, a good game on its own, and two, it integrated the motion control stuff without shoehorning it in.
Mm-hmm.
And I am really looking forward to Skyward Sword. If it's anywhere near as good as Twilight Princess, it's going to be great.
All the best games for the Wii come from Nintendo anyway. So, yeah, I'm excited.
Dragon Age 2. I enjoyed Dragon Age 1. I
thought you didn't like...
It wasn't like my favorite game, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was a B.
I loved it. I thought it was
B minus. But they're fixing one of my major complaints, which is you no longer have the silent hero. The character you're playing is now someone. And so I'm really looking forward to that.
My guy was Beard Dude. I had this really scruffy, ugly looking beard that had more personality than he did.
I played a...
But I enjoyed the hell out of the game anyway.
You see, I ended up playing a rogue elf chick. Now let me explain each of those in turn. I went with a rogue because, being the completionist, I didn't like the idea there would be things in the game I couldn't pick lock or get through.
Eh.
Totally my neurosis.
Right.
I'm completely admitting that. I'm just saying it's true.
Mm-hmm.
I went with an elf because of the fact that I didn't like the human rogue start. It made sense as a warrior, but being a rogue who's a prince in a castle just really didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And I went with a chick because, in my mind, elves only have two genders, female and gay. And so I went with female.
Fair enough.
But my final one...
Pat wants to just burst forth.
Come on, Pat. Go ahead.
I would have picked gay female, but that's, you know, apparently not a choice.
You can. Oh, okay. I did. Romance, okay. Romantic interest, nice. Liliana.
There we go.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
There was some hot elf chick on human chick action.
Win, win, win.
Nice.
No, not when. She was old and nasty.
Oh,
she's not old and nasty. She's just old.
Liliana, Liliana, Liliana. For anyone who did not catch that pun, play the game and you'll catch the pun on your second listen through of this episode. Since, you know, I know everybody listens to these episodes four times.
Listen to an hour of an episode. Play an 80-hour long role-playing game. Come back and listen to the same hour-long episode to get
one joke.
Oh, someone will do it.
Not me.
Yeah.
You won't listen the first time.
That's true.
You're not listening now.
Why should I listen to this? I was here.
My fourth video game I'm looking forward to, and I've had somebody tell me there's a few more I should be looking forward to, but this is just the fourth one on my list, is Mass Effect 3. I know Chad hates it. I'm a huge fan of Mass Effect because, quite frankly, it gives me what I want out of science fiction. I don't get the big ship-on-ship battles, but nonetheless...
Oh, yeah. Wait, ships? I still don't like the game.
I'm a human soldier running around in powered armor with a machine gun, fixing aliens the proper
fixing
way.
Fixing aliens.
That's correct.
Nice. That might be why I never got into it. I'm not a big power armor or human soldier type person in games for the most part.
I like it. I like it too, Dan. We're right there.
I know.
Along. It's
I think it has gameplay.
Wayne's like elves have two genders.
And both of them are more awesome than yours.
Mass Effect could have the greatest story on the face of the planet to come out of a video game. I wouldn't know because I couldn't get past the horrible gameplay of Mass Effect 1, which I understand a lot of that was fixed into.
I plan on trying it again. I couldn't get into it the first time.
Elevators the game.
The killer part of Mass Effect 1, the game killer, was the
Mako,
Citadel
and Mako.
The Mako didn't bother me. It was the Citadel because you spend a long time there doing a lot of tedious things. I understand why they did it, because they were teaching you about the races, the setting, the politics, but it was very tedious.
I don't mind that sort of stuff, but you're right. The way in which they went about it was very... Because they did the same thing in Dragon Age. Dragon Age has different races and history and stuff, and they same company, and they teach you in the same ways. But Dragon Age, it just kind of popped more. Whereas in Mass Effect 2,
it's a little bit better in that it's much more fast-paced.
Yeah.
You start in the middle of an action scene, and they presume you already know the setting. If you don't, you can go read the codex.
Yeah.
They're not teaching you the setting. You're dumped straight into the action. I was not a big fan of the replacement of the Mako with planet scanning, but nonetheless, I have enjoyed the series. I am very much looking forward to Mass Effect 3. All right, so
I'm looking forward to two things that I will not receive ever. I'm looking forward to Portal 2, which I might get. It might come out this year. It's supposed to come out last year. Might get this
year. Half-Life Episode 3.
Yeah, buddy.
Good luck.
Yeah, indeed. I'm not holding my breath
for that.
You're
more likely to shake hands with the real Santa than you are.
They've shown a lot of footage, though, Portal 3. They've shown pictures. So I can see that coming out.
I think Portal 3 just got delayed.
In Portal 2 or
Portal 2. Portal 2. I'm mixing up Half-Life Episode 3. Half-Life 2 Episode 3 is the one that should have come out like 3 years ago.
Yes.
And it just hasn't. And they haven't talked about it. They haven't released it. They haven't released a... I'm a huge Half-Life fan. I have played every Half-Life game. Every single one. Even the spinoffs. Blue Shift, Opposing Forces. I've played Half-Life 1. I've played Half-Life 2. All the episodes.
Struggled with Half-Life. Portal. But I played Half-Life 2, all the Half-Life 2 episodes, and Portal, loved them all. I struggled with Half-Life 1, partially because
it's a little dated.
It was a little dated, but more than that, it made me motion sick.
Really?
The vast majority of first-person games do not make me motion sick.
Turn off Bob.
But I did. But one in 1,000 first-person games will make me motion sick, and I've been told there are two typical causes for it. One is the Bob, where your weapon moves or the screen moves, which I did not have on. The other thing, and I think it was Keith Curtis who's talking about this, is they did a study on what causes that, and they think it has something to do with your field of view.
Yeah, the edges.
And so they think that newer games that are made for a wider screen are easier on the player.
And you can reduce the field of view with it. That's a slider option that you can do, and you have to play with it. But basically, you'd have to tweak it and tweak it and then play it. It's like, am I getting sick? Oh, I'm getting sick. Okay, now I'm going to tweak it. Am I getting sick? Oh, I'm getting sick. Well, who wants to do that? You just want to run in there and shoot aliens.
And the bitch is, once you're motion sick, it doesn't pass instantly.
Right.
Yeah, I'm motion sick. Time to take a 3-hour break, come back later and try again.
You can always get some Dramamine to play an old school video game. I
medicate myself for the sake of playing a video game that really doesn't hugely interest me anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't have a very deep plot in Half-Life 1.
All right, so let's open this up. Wayne, you said you had some movies you were looking forward to.
Yeah, this is another big year for comic book movies. Thor's getting ready to come out, and as much as I wasn't sure about how this would look, the previews look really good.
These look very good.
I'm excited about Thor. I'm really excited about Captain America. It is a superhero story in World War II.
Don't know if it'll be good, but the premise has got me sold.
Yeah.
Isn't Hugo Weaving playing Red Skull?
I don't know who Hugo Weaving is.
I'm bad with casting, so
Hugo Weaving is Elrond. He was Agent Smith in The Matrix.
He was also
one
of the main characters in Priscilla Queen of the Desert then.
Is there a...
He's a good actor. I like
him.
He
is. Priscilla Queen of the Desert is a fantastic movie.
Is there a trailer out for
it? There's not a trailer out yet. There's been like screen captures of it where they've been recording, and I've seen pictures, and the pictures look really cool.
You know what? I wish I had better Photoshop skills so I could make... Because this is something I'm not looking forward to after having watched the previews. I wish I had enough Photoshop skills to make a movie poster that just said Transformers 3 and the subcaption is Transformers 1. Because if you watch the trailer, it's like the exact same plot all over again.
I know.
There's a plot to those?
Oh, God.
Ish.
So I went to see True Grit in one of the trailers, and that was Transformers 3. And I didn't realize this what it was till pretty much toward the end. I mean, they're on the moon
instead of Mars. This
crap. And I'm like, what is this? Yeah. And it was kind of an interesting setup. I'm like, oh, I like where this is going. This could be really cool. Oh,
you know, I had that exact same thing years ago. I'm sitting there watching a movie. I think I was with John, too. And you know the 40K setting Necromunda?
Yeah.
So I was watching this trailer.
Great game.
Yes, great game. Wonderful game. I won a tournament of that one time. Ha ha ha. But I was sitting there, I think I was with John, and this movie starts playing, this trailer, and we're like, holy shit, it's Necromunda the movie. And Leah's like, is this Necromunda? This looks like Necromunda. Did they make a Necromunda movie? Chronicles of Riddick.
Oh.
And I was just like, ah.
Maybe that's why I should do a Necromunda LARP.
Can I be the big guys with the...
Let's talk about the spire.
Smokehawks and, and the no shirts on?
I don't know.
That would be really, really horrible.
It's been years since I've played it, so I have to look up all the stuff for it.
You know what I'm not looking forward to that, I'll be seeing this week, which will already have been out by the time this gets dropped? Green Hornet.
Why are you not looking forward to that? I'm actually looking forward to that.
He has free tickets and he's not looking forward to it.
I mean, I like the fact I have free tickets. I'm going to get to see it before it comes out.
Seth Rogen isn't funny.
It's Seth Rogen. They're trying to make a comedy out of it. I don't want it to be a comedy. I want this to be dark and get the Batman treatment.
Yeah, I got to be honest, Wayne. That's on my list of not going to bother unless someone comes back to me and says, you would not believe Runaway hit. Go see this movie.
I just don't care about...
They're going slapstick, and I don't want slapstick in my superhero movie.
Yeah,
that's why the Green Lantern trailer looks so bad.
Green Hornet is about... I mean, Green Hornet is not a terribly serious piece that you're looking at in the first place. It's, you know...
Well, you know what? Neither was Batman. Batman had giant pennies and big rubber duckies robbing banks.
I don't know. I look at it as it's more of a... I think it's going to be more of just a fun, feel-good movie. It's going to be more... whatever.
It led to a really interesting Mythbusters where they cut a car in half and a track.
It didn't even get out the gate for me with the Seth Rogen. I'm not a huge fan of him anyway. But my problem with Green Hornet is I just don't care.
I'm the same
way. I've never gotten into Green Hornet.
I've read some of the comics. I used to like the TV show. And
I think I've seen one episode of the TV show.
I don't read all the comics, but I've read some of them and I like the concept.
It's like the Hulk movie. I didn't see the first one, which was awful because I just didn't care about the Hulk, and which saved me. And then I didn't see the second one because I just don't care about the Hulk. The second one's really good.
That's where I was at with the second one was I didn't see the first one because I'm not a Hulk fan. Wasn't going to see the second one until several people whose opinions I respect came back to me and said, this is a lot better than you would expect. At which point I went out and saw it and I really enjoyed it.
You know what the Hulk movie really did? It hyped me for Captain America because you've got Captain America basically in that movie. You've got a guy that they drug up with the super soldier serum.
Yeah.
Jumping around the Hulk. You've seen what they can do special effect wise in a Captain America movie. Now.
That's true.
And then before I knew anything about the Captain America movie, before I knew they were going to set it in World War II, I was already excited about Captain America because I saw it on screen. I saw they can do this. They can make it look good.
You know what? Surprisingly, I feel like I ought to have, and I don't. And I'm sure this is probably...
New Twilight movie?
No. This is probably in some bit a testament to the fact that we don't really keep up with the industry that we're supposed to be covering. What's the big RPG release this year?
I don't buy RPGs, so
Going back several years, of course, it was 4th edition. Then you had Geist.
Last year was Dresden Files.
Yeah, last year was Dresden Files. What's the big RPG thing for this year? What's the big hype title for this year? I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea what it is.
Don't know. Don't care. I mean, it sounds callow and callous, but I make my own games.
Well, I can't say I don't care. Because
I can.
I'm curious. And you know what? I'm certainly not.
I care because I want to try everything.
Yeah, and I'm not. You know what?
I've heard that about you, Wayne.
If everything but you, Pat. Everything but you.
Hey,
he's saving the best for last.
Wayne's have two orientations.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, if there's a big game coming out, I'm curious what it is. Because, you know, obviously, if it's big and hyped, it might be good. Big and hype doesn't mean it is good, but it might be good, might be worth looking into. And I'm just kind of curious what it is, but I really haven't heard anything.
Is anybody even really releasing a major title that's new? Because, to be quite frankly, the economy sucks. Is there a market for a new big title? Now, the indie guys, because their overhead is pretty low, relatively speaking, they can put stuff out all the time. And I think that they might make gains in a market, but...
I wouldn't expect it much out of White Wolf at this point, because I don't think that they're really interested anymore.
Well, I think that they're not interested in putting out physical books, and I think that they're going for online video games and online books and marketing PDF type stuff.
Wayne, you keep up with this silliness. Is there anything in the comic book world that you're looking forward to? Not movies, but comic books, graphic novels.
A lot of stuff I'm not looking forward to. Some of the current storylines. So far, though, no. Marvel's going back to their big crossover events this year, so I'm disappointed by that. Huh. Honestly, the best things coming out of comic books right now that I'm excited about are some of the cartoons. There's a new Avengers cartoon that's out that is absolutely incredible. Telling great stories, looks good. It's Earth's Mightiest Heroes Avengers. Over the Christmas holiday, I watched marathons of that. Loved it.
How long has that been out? Because I try to stay up with those, but I have been lax.
Only a couple months.
You mentioned one earlier on.
Young Justice.
Young Justice. When did that start?
First episode was this week.
Oh, okay. So I'm not too far behind. Is it like Cartoon Network or?
Not sure.
I'll look
I don't know
it.
What channel anything's on. I don't watch it.
I know.
Live.
Well, neither do I, but I've got to set up a season pass in the first place. So,
I'm excited about Walking Dead coming back.
Okay. There's some
It'll
stuff.
Be a long time.
2011 but. TV shows. While the V reimagining, I thought it took a couple episodes to find its footing. It had somewhat of an awkward
premiere
start.
Was incredible.
I thought the show got very good late last year in episodes maybe 4, 5, and 6. And this year, the premiere was really good. I'm very much looking forward to following the V series throughout the year. It looks like it's shaping up really well.
I have the first two episodes of The Cape on my DVR.
I haven't watched it.
I've heard it's terrible.
I'm holding out hope.
I've not watched it, but the word I've gotten from people who have is it's terrible. Once again, I have no idea. I haven't seen it personally.
Well,
that's just
when we finally get to bury Smallville this year. This is the last season of Smallville, and then we never have to hear about it again.
I just watched the last aired episode of that today, actually, before they start up again in a couple weeks.
I have an entire year, 2011, of old Doctor Who to watch, because I just got into the Tom Baker stuff, and shock and surprise, Dawn is actually getting into Doctor Who with me. She had a traumatic Doctor Who experience as a child. Her mom used to watch it, and as a too little kid, she watched it with her mom and got scared. And so she's like, Doctor Who's scary. Doctor Who's scary. And it's just like, well, here, watch this episode with me. Weeping Angels. Oh, my God. You know, that freaks me out, too. I mean, that's a freaky episode. I was.
There's only one immutable law in the universe, and it is Murphy's Law.
Yes.
I'm just telling you straight up. I go through this all the time. Like, if I'm playing blackjack, I'll have, like, a 14. And somebody, you got to hit on that. It's like, no, absolutely not. Murphy's freaking law. And sure enough, every time I pass it over, next guy hits, gets a king.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that is the immutable truth of the universe.
I'm just amazed that of all the episodes for to come on, it was Blink. Because that episode is the creepiest piece of television I've ever seen. And I don't mean the creepiest Doctor Who episode. I mean, it's the creepiest episode of any show I've ever seen on TV.
Good. Well, we started watching Tom Baker Doctor Who because I'm watching them all in order. And we had just finished up John Pertwee, which is my favorite Doctor Who. And I just kept talking about it.
We have a 20-minute Fear on Route recorded that is Chad talking about Doctor Who.
And so she's sitting there playing on her computer. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to watch the very first Tom Baker episode. And she's like, great. And it's like, it's got a robot. Because it's called a robot.
It's horrible.
It's bad. And so we sit there and there's nothing scary about it. There's no monsters. There's a robot. The robot looks ridiculous. And we make fun of it. So we sit there and we kind of make fun. We have a good time with it. And then so that one leads into the second one. And she kind of sort of maybe kind of wants to find out what happened next. And so it just so happens, same situation. A few nights later, I put it in and watch
it. And it just so happens the second one is
very good.
Is one of the most well-known, well-acclaimed Doctor Who episodes of all time.
Yeah,
Ark in Space.
And she even said, after we watched it, she's like, I am not a Doctor Who person at all. I'm anti-Doctor Who. And she's like, even I have heard of Ark in Space through different fandoms and stuff. And it is. It's got a lot of silliness. And it's got the bubble wrap green monsters. And we chuckled at that. But the story is very good. And the end of that story, they beam down to the planet to fix what's wrong and wait till next week. And then the next story arc starts. And so she was actually asking me about it. It's like, did you get the new Doctor Who in? And I'm like, I gotcha, didn't I? So I got that going on. But in addition to old Doctor Who, which is not new for 2011, there is new 2011 Doctor Who coming out. It looks awesome. A lot of it takes place in America. It looks like they're doing a Western.
Huh.
And there was one where the doctor is sitting in the Oval Office and all these guys run in with guns, you know, Secret Service guys, they put guns at him, and he's like picking up phones and he's like, you know, tell the French ambassador this and tell, you know, this and don't launch those missiles and push this. And he's like, gentlemen, would you like a scone or something like that? And they all have these Glocks on them.
You should change the topic quickly, Dan.
I can't wait.
If you don't change the topic, you're going to have to clean up the table in front of Chad.
Doctor
And we're going to have a whole episode on Doctor Who.
Dude, I know. It's just friends don't let friends shoot Glocks.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking, too.
Secret Service.
Yeah, and actually, they mostly, well, they shift around. Last I heard, they're using SIGs because the 357 SIG Brown does not front load jam because of the way it's shaped. But anyway, that's a completely tangential story. But friends don't let friends shoot Glocks. That's my 2011 advice for you. So this past Sunday.
Sunday.
You know what?
What?
I'm going to put a reverb on your voice.
No, I'm the only reverb you've ever done.
He's a reverb.
When did I reverb you? When I did Sunday.
Fine. Yes, but the competition between the two of you, you guys have to stay equal. So yeah. It's just the way your marriage
like
works.
And this is like brother sister.
Yeah.
Stuff. Okay. I tell you what, I'll reverb both of you because you both said it. But so this past Sunday,
you have got to reverb yourself. No.
I was not able to make it to the game, and another guy wasn't able to either. So the rest of the group ran a one-shotter.
Yes.
And so what I want to talk about now is the virtues and pitfalls of a one-shotter. Now, I realize we've talked about similar topics in the past, and so I want to frame this one a little bit differently. And I'm sure there's going to be some overlapping conversation, but I've got some new directions and new ideas that I think we can talk about. And the way I'm going to achieve that is I want to put the boundary. We are not talking about con games. We're talking about within your regular group, you decide to run a one-shotter. Maybe you're between games. Maybe you're not between games, but just a group of people can't make it, so you need something to kind of fill time. Maybe you just need a break for a week, and so you decide you want to do something unusual. But let's start off with the virtues of the one-shotter. And the first and biggest thing I'm going to give is it lets you try things out.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with three specific things that lets you try out. One, new games. You don't know if you like it. You don't know you want to commit to a campaign of it. But you can sit down, you can try a game, and see how it goes. Two, from a game master standpoint, he can try a plot thing, because if it fails miserably, who cares? And three, from the player's standpoint, they can try characters they wouldn't otherwise try, because if it sucks and doesn't work out, you're not saddled with it for any more than a couple hours.
I don't know. That all seems like very negative things to me. I don't know. They're totally valid, but it's just like,
why does it
seem we want to try it because we might not like it. We want to do this with these characters we haven't tried because we might not like the characters. It's all valid. Like I said, it takes.
Well, I want to try it because I've never done it before, and I want to try
a
lot of
new thing,
and I want to try a lot of new and good things.
Yeah,
but Chad, here's the way in which I would spin it positive.
Mm-hmm.
We have a limited amount of time. In this case, we have a campaign we are enjoying. These things converge to make me chicken shit. I don't know that I want to mess with what we have.
Right.
And so while it may sound negative, the fact is that, yeah, I walk into this saying I'm only going to do it on a one-shotter because I may dislike it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also with the implied thought that I may like it.
Yeah.
And this is how I discover I like it. This idea sounded totally like crap until I tried it, and now I love it. And now I would be willing to come back to it.
And
later.
Two things kill a game. Faster than anything else. One is Christmas, and two is the new shiny.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think there is a danger in that. But, you know, a danger, you're going to poke an eye out with your role-playing games. I wouldn't grab Dungeons & Dragons off the shelf and run one-shot. I wouldn't grab Shadowrun off the shelf and do a one-shot. I mean, there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with running a one-shot with any of those systems. But I wouldn't, because those systems are set up to have a bigger, more robust game. Whereas there are other games, like my Inception game, that is
well, or fiasco Spirit or, of the Sunshine.
Yeah, that sort of stuff, which are kind of made for one-shotters.
There are a lot of games that are just designed for that one thing. Penny for My Thoughts, Paul Tevis's game. That sounds like an incredible game. It's probably
itching to play that game. Yeah, it's too. Probably I want to as well.
It is probably what I'm going to run at Fear the Con 4 is Penny for My Thoughts.
Why don't you run at Fear the Con 3 and one up me? Because wait, no, we already did over. Fear the Con are we on?
Four.
Oh, my four.
God.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, my year. God.
We're on the second to last Fear the Con. That's good, because Fear the Con 5 will be the final Fear the Con.
Yep.
And then the Mayans will wipe out the Earth.
Oh, so, I gotcha. Yeah.
Well, it should be an easy way to remember it. Pat, you were about to say something which is an unusual.
Well, I was just going to say that I agree with you, Chad. And I like to do one-shots for many of the reasons that Dan mentioned, and I don't look at them in a negative way, but I also am more like you. If I do a one shot, I don't like to play in a system that has a heavily involved character creation, you know, mechanic, because for me, it's like, if we're getting together and we're going to do this one shot and it's going to be this one session, I don't want to spend the first hour or more of the session just putting together a freaking character.
You've got 5 hours to play a game. You spend an hour making characters, well, that's a big percentage.
Yeah.
When you're running a campaign, you spend 2 hours making a character, but you spend 500 hours playing across
the
course.
So I think that if you've got a system that is very light on the character generation or whatever, even light on the mechanics that you're going to use, I think that's even better.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that a lot of these indie games really excel at. Your character creation is built into the game. It's real quick. It gets you going. It's designed where, you know, sometimes the book itself is in character and you read it while you're playing the game to get everyone in.
Time and Temp is like that. Time and Temp is an excellent game.
A lot of times totally the end character. Of the game is something that's part of the rule system itself as well. Mm-hmm. It's not only great for a one shot, it's designed for a one shot, designed for people that have never played before. And that's why they're really so useful like this. I'm with Chad. I'm not against a one shot of like a D&D or something.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with
that. But there's a lot of systems that are designed for it. And I want to try a bunch of those.
Well, let me pitch two things in defense of established and even complex systems that I think can make them work. The first off is your point about character creation is absolutely well taken. But if you know it's going to be a one shot to begin with, I don't think there's any harm in bringing in pre-generated characters. Even if it's not, you're going to assign them, maybe bring in twice as many characters as there are people. So folks have some kind of selection or whatever. But you can bring in pre-generated characters. And secondly, I realize that if the game has an unusually complex mechanic that's hard to convey on the fly, it's one you really have to learn over time, that may be a non-starter.
Maybe you just don't use that mechanic too.
Well, but if you pick a game that people are already familiar with, or even if it's complex, it's easy to learn step-by-step tutorial method on the fly, then I think it can still work out. I mean, let's go back to a D&D game. You come in, I've got a stack of characters. There's a knight and a mage and a rogue and whatever else, and you pick the one you want to play, and we're all familiar with the system. If I've got a plot line that can be resolved in the course of about 4 hours, we can hop right in and do it. A couple weeks ago, we were talking about doing a one-shotter on a week I thought I was going to be able to make it, and I was considering running a Shadowrun one-shotter, and I was going to use the archetypes in the book as the characters. That basically, I was just going to give them personalities. They're already pre-gen. Pick from one of those. It's going to be one run. Just, you know, it's not going to be this big ongoing campaign. And so this game would have still lended itself pretty well to a one-shotter, but I will certainly concede that there are games out there you learn as you go. It's real rules light. Your character is described in adjectives as opposed to statistics.
Well, that's my big one. If I'm looking at D&D, and I've only done one D&D one shot ever, when I look at it, I think with all of these stats and all these numbers and the character sheets you're looking at it, I don't see a lot of actual RP or a lot of personality coming out of those kind of one shots. But games where your character sheet is giving you personality traits, or you have aspects that are being tagged or things like that, I see a lot more personality come out in those kind of one-shots.
Well, and I can't entirely disagree with that, in that certainly the way a game or character sheet is structured is going to prompt you in a certain direction, but ultimately the choice of role-playing and the depth of role-playing, I mean, it's ultimately in the eye of the beholder. I mean, I could hand you nothing but a character sheet with no personality whatsoever, And if you look at that and a character idea emerges from that into your mind, you can role play it. I mean, Chad, you several weeks ago told that story about how you went to a 4E game that had no character whatsoever and were introducing role playing into it. And so I
actually
don't,
he wasn't.
I was biting back my
tongue. We told him he should and he did.
Use voice. I'm like, I want to, but I don't know if these guys are down with it.
He didn't want to get run out on a rail, so he didn't.
Well, I didn't want to. This was their game.
Right.
I already felt I was kind of intruding on their game anyway, and so I didn't want to rock the boat. But of course, I found out at the end of it, yeah, these guys are totally into role playing, and they're just not doing it that night. And I think they would have been completely down with it. Bunch of cool people anyway. Like I said, I have absolutely no problem with a one-shot that is a major system designed for long campaigns. It's just right tool for the right job.
Right.
And
I think that, yeah, there's just so many tools that are better that I want to try first.
Yeah.
I'm all for one-shots of regular systems too, but I want to try all these others first.
I think a big thing that you need to consider, though, you sort of hit on it earlier, is that if you're going to do it of a big established system, then you need to make sure that everybody at the table is familiar with that system. You don't want to try to do a one-shot with system that even one person has never played before, because then it's like, oh, well, we've got to teach them the system that we're trying to do a quick, fun, easy game. And then I think it just falls apart.
And that's what's good about a lot of these so-called indie games, is that a lot of the rules are pamphlets and they're high concept games. And that's kind of what I want out of a one-shot. I've discovered this about myself recently in running one-shots and running campaigns and stuff, is that I play these games that are at cons and they have mini campaigns. They have a plot and it's the beginning, middle, and end, and it's just like a campaign, only it's compressed within 4 or 5 hours. And there's nothing wrong with that. We have lots of fun. But I like playing games that are really high concept type of stuff, where it's really about the characters and character motivations, like Dread or something like that. And A Penny for Your Thoughts sounds interesting, that sort of thing. It's just these high concept games, which I don't really think that these high concept games translate well into a long campaign.
A lot of them wouldn't,
but I think that you can make them to where they would. Again, right tool for the right job.
Right.
Shadowrun can be run as a con game. I've played it as a con game. I've had fun as a con game. I got to say the line, I punch him until candy comes out. And so,
does that work? Because if it does,
oh, my orc tried and tried and tried and tried and no candy.
Damn it.
Yeah, I would love to see us talk at some point about a concept we've discussed a few times, taking one of these indie games that is a high concept game and throwing it right into your campaign as part of it or as part of your character creation.
Something else that one-shotters allow is a certain amount of chaos that would otherwise destroy a campaign. Mm-hmm. The example that came up, and this is from the one-shotter that Chad was running this past Sunday, and I have to be careful how
Silent Memories.
Yes. Well, I have to be careful how I phrase this, because you're running this at Fear the Con, so I don't want to drop any spoilers.
Yeah, there's a lot of twisty-turny stuff.
But
too,
so. A traitor mechanic.
Yes.
The idea that one or more party members may be not just tense, but actively out to get each other, to kill each other, to wipe each other out. Look, that's a campaign ender.
You're right.
But
I don't think it has to be. If it's played the right way, if the traitor can be won back over, that can be a long going arc for that person.
And that's the big.
It depends on the level of betrayal. I mean, it's like everybody thinks they're friends, and then you have one guy who, okay, they're all in the car together. I put the quote unquote suitcase in the trunk, and then I tell the guys, I got to go to the bathroom. I'll be right back. And I press the big red button.
Yeah.
Boom.
Because this ends one of two ways. Either the traitor gets found out and killed, or the rest of the party gets killed by the traitor.
Now,
either way, massive campaign interrupt.
If the traitor is working at cross purposes, though, if it isn't about an act of violence or a grand betrayal, they just have cross purposes. I can't even think of an example. Spies would be like this. When you have a spy, you're doing like this sort of born identity spy team, but one guy on the team is a double agent, and they're working at cross purposes. Can that double agent be turned? Because there's the whole meta of, well, I mean, we're getting into campaigns. This is what you do in a campaign. I think that in a one-shotter, you can have the vicious grand betrayal. You can totally have one player actively working against him. But to my mind, having that traitor mechanic, having that one guy working against the team, if it's like that from the outset, where you have one guy and he's the bad guy, it doesn't work. You know, the game master can play the big bad as well as another player can. It's novelty. You need to have it to where there's tension between the characters that is already established. Because in these one-shots, the game masters kind of make the characters beforehand, usually. Or in the design of the characters, you implement cross-purposes and stuff. And you can pull one guy aside or do some mechanic to say, okay, at this point, when this happens, then you come into betrayal. Or in the middle of the game, you pull the guy out and say, well, guess what? You're the bad guy. You're the one who started all this. You're the one who did this.
One of the other things that I love about one-shots is the ability as a game master to watch groups solve things in radically different ways. That especially if you have multiple gaming groups, you give them each the same one-shotter. Mm-hmm. They have the same basic starting characters, the same basic starting scenario, and yet they will deal with the situation so differently. I saw examples of this when I was running Epoch Arisos games at Fear the Con. Where one group chose a more diplomatic method, whereas another group chose more of a James Bond computer hacking, slipping through the system method. Chad, you saw this with your Inception game, where one group, because of the fact that you use your character questionnaires to design the mark, one group came up with a guy who's what, a middle-aged Japanese man.
Yeah, and middle-aged Japanese American who had trouble with women, we'll say.
And with our group, one of the questions on my questionnaire was, why do you have reservations about hitting this mark? And I wrote down, because I'm not sure I'm okay with doing this to a child.
Right.
And so instead, we ended up with a school child.
Yeah.
It was watching these two different groups tackle the same scenario in such radically different ways. And that's one of the reasons why at these conventions, and I don't want to go back to con games, that's really not what I focus on, but once again, you could see the same thing in multiple gaming groups, is seeing how two groups can take these in different directions is fascinating to watch. It's fascinating to compare notes. That's just a real pleasure that I get out of doing that. Let me hit on two issues that I think you have with one.
Uh-oh. Role-playing dangers?
Dangers.
Dangers.
This is where role-playing gets dangerous.
Nice.
First off, introducing the rules, particularly if the group is not familiar with the game.
I did that once and lost a kidney. That's how dangerous this is.
Yeah. Woke up in a tub of ice.
Yep, with a note. Call 911 immediately.
And a quarter on your belly. But it's introducing nice. Rules. And I think some of this really comes down to the same way you would handle introducing any new player to a game, except in this case, the new player may be the entire group, where you have to explain step by step what their options are, what things on the sheet means. And certainly the simpler the system, the easier that is. It's going to be a lot easier to do this with Spirit of the Century than it is with Champions. But nonetheless, I think you can take some approach of giving people sort of a brief tour of their character sheet, and when you get to various situations, explain, okay, there's a computer in front of you. Now you have a cutting tool, but you over here have a hacking skill, and, you know, kind of giving some people a slow building tutorial of the options on their character sheet. And even if they don't get everything, as long as you're not being a total hard ass as a GM, they'll get enough that they can kind of fumble their way through the
game.
That's
why I like high concept indie games. No character sheets. Sometimes.
Or extremely
a lot of high concept ones even have it.
I mean, yeah, sometimes some of them do.
Okay, Dan, I think we've hit a lot of the topics we've actually kind of talked on before. So I want to get to one of my big questions here. It's pretty common for people to pick up a new role-playing game book and then talk about running a game that night or the next day, one of these one-shots. And I'm really curious, because I can't imagine doing it, and I've seen Chad do this. How do you, out of the blue, without any prep at all, throw together a one-shot for a group of people? Because I've got no clue. I can't imagine just picking up the book and glancing through, or even you have no book and you're throwing together a system yourself.
Okay, well, let me answer that in two parts. Let me start with, you grab a brand new book. If you go out to a gaming store and you buy a book, we're not talking in any game. This is a 250-page rule book or rules and setting book, and you want to run it that night. good luck.
People do it all the time at cons, though. They go to the booth table, they buy a book, they come back and they run it.
And yeah, and in some cases, they might have someone at the table who has some prior knowledge of the game. They themselves might have some prior knowledge of the game. They, quite frankly, may just be really good at speed reading and picking out what they need to know. The approach that I would take, personally, because I ain't brave enough to do it, I would start with a game that I'm either A, familiar with, or B, know is really simple to run. But I guess it just really comes down to your ability, not per se to entirely improv, but to brainstorm. Can you take a setting and pretty quickly come up with a conundrum? Can you take a setting and say, okay, it's a science fiction thing. I remember seeing an obscure science fiction movie. It was like this, this, and this. And I can go ahead and flesh out a plot line along this. Chad, not that he invented this, but has done a wonderful job of implementing this. Get everyone else to help you. Get people to collaborate. Get them to explain why their characters are doing things. Ask them these very leading questions of, why are you involved in this? Why don't you like Pat's character? And all of a sudden, the players on their own start making the plot line emerge.
Which is very common of some of these games. He completely ripped that off of a ton of games I've seen.
I'll tell you right now, if I took something like, let's say, the Shadowrun Rules book, dropped it in your lap, said you have to create characters for all of us. Yeah, Chad can show you. That's the second edition book. I've got the
dropped it in his lap.
I've got the fourth edition book in another room. But if someone was to drop that in your lap and say, okay, you've got a couple hours to bang out characters, bang out a plot, and understand the rules, Wayne, quite frankly, you're screwed.
I'm not. So I'd ask a couple of questions. I'm like, one, do the players need to have character sheets accurately filled out to feel like they're having fun? Yes or no? It's a question.
Yes, it's a question. Yeah, for me, I think the answer would be yes.
Okay. Then we are going to flip to archetypes, and we're going to steal the archetypes from here because they're all statted out. Thank you, Shadowrun. And we're going to use those. And we are going to take this book and put it over there. Now they have character sheets and they're having fun. They can have all the dice they want. And now we're going to think of a movie. We're going to think of Johnny Mnemonic. And now we're going to play a ripoff of the short story, Johnny Mnemonic, by William Gibson, is actually a better well to draw from. And I am going to run the short story of Johnny Mnemonic for these
guys. Well, and so you start getting the players to answer some leading questions to make it different. So it's Johnny Mnemonic, but not quite Johnny Mnemonic.
Because my thing, if I have to run it now and you don't know anything and there's no plans, steal.
And you know what? Relax about it, because the biggest thing somebody remembers when they walk away from an RPG session is whether they had fun, not whether it was vaguely identifiable as another intellectual property. Yeah,
and one thing I've seen Chad do very well, and actually I've seen Bob Arnes does this even better than you,
is
sit down there with nothing at all in front of you. Okay, I need a game system. Give me a notepad. Mm-hmm. And he just has you write things down.
Look, I'm just going to give you a fact of nature. Bob Arnes is everything better than everybody else. it's just a truth. Though Chad did finally defeat him at the liquor game.
Did I?
I thought you did.
It wasn't Chad.
It wasn't me. I never beat him.
I thought somebody finally defeated him.
No, I think Mikey Mason thought he did.
Oh my gosh.
But only he thinks.
So have you heard the thought exercise of what happens if you butter a piece of toast, put it on a cat's back, and drop it, and you create a perpetual motion machine? Because cats always land on their feet, and toast always lands butter side down, so they just spin in midair. What would happen if Bob Arnes
and a cat with butter on its back
and Dave from Iron Agenda had to play each other at a game?
They would both die and turn to dust because no one would have won. It would just be an eternal stalemate.
I know. It would just be this eternal struggle.
They would eventually turn into like pillars of salt or something crazy.
You know, the funny thing is, I think that there's probably hundreds and hundreds of listeners going on right now who are like,
who the hell are we talking?
Bob Arnes, and who's this Dave? Dave guy is the guy who always wins. He's been on the show.
Yeah. But he's a trope here by now.
Yeah. You should go listen to his podcast. Sorry, Dave.
So the other thing that I've got here, and this was something that Wayne brought up as a question, and I think it's a good question, is, let's say for a moment that you are running a game that is not in a real, readily identifiable intellectual property. This is not in Star Trek. This is not in Star Wars. This is not in Middle Earth. How do you introduce people to the setting, to the tech level, to cultures, to whatever may be important to the game in the course of a one-shotter?
Tech level is a big one, because when I think sci-fi, even if I think I'm on a spaceship, there are a couple of questions that I know I, as a player, generally ask, because it kind of gives me that idea of the tech level. You know, if you don't know what your tech level is, you have no idea what you can and can't do.
Oh, when I had this problem at Baca Vrysos at Fear the Con, in one of the games, they got partway through the game until one of them said, man, we can't do this, this, and this. And I'm like, actually, yeah, the thing you have on you is capable of doing that. Reason being, I had always written the game with a lot of detail, and I had always written it with campaigns in mind. Screw up on my part.
Mm.
The only solution I came up with for this was, you got to pick something that's readily identifiable. It could be modern day. It could be a well-known intellectual property. You've got to pick something where people are going to immediately know what the boundaries of the universe are.
Well, in this game I ran on Sunday, too, it's a science fiction game, and they're on a spaceship, and then the questions started. Tech-level questions, very valid questions. Are there transporters?
My question was, because it usually sensors, says the level, are there sensors? And when I ask for sensors, I'm thinking, okay, can the ship tell that there's heat signatures moving around? I'm not thinking, can it go down to the subatomic level of a person?
When he asked that, I instantly start thinking Star Trek. And I'm like, no, there isn't. It's a low-tech sci-fi game.
You're
and,
thinking Star Trek. Well, I'm thinking security systems.
I detect a female Klingon using the bathroom on deck 4, and she's thinking thoughts of murder. Sensors. And it's like, no.
Sensors detect treachery.
And so,
God bless TIE Fighter.
And I'm like, no sensors, and there's no teleporters, and there's no matter whatever. Morgrafired unobtainium. There's no phasers. There's no any of that. I think it helps if you're doing sci-fi to kind of go low tech, but you go high tech.
Well, but I think the importance of it is that you just take a few minutes, 5 minutes at the outset and describe your setting couched in easily understandable terms like that. And, you know, like imagine that it is us maybe 20 years in the future or a little bit like that. We're basically using this same level of technology. We don't have all this other stuff or not. You say,
or maybe compare it to something else. Like a good one for you would have been think Battlestar Galactica without the
right, and I was going to say, compare it to an intellectual property that's similar.
I actually don't think that's a good idea to say, well, think Battlestar Galactica, but without, because then people start thinking this in terms of Battlestar Galactica, and they get Battlestar Galactica, the new one at least, and the old one too, is a certain kind of thing, and then they start thinking in certain kind of ways. Dan's Epoch of Rysos game is like this, the one we recently played. Dan wanted to run military sci-fi. The other guys, we didn't want to run military, but we wanted to run, we're loners, we got the ship, we're doing jobs, we're kind of outside the law, and all of a sudden somebody said Firefly. Well, suddenly, everything about the game became, in my mind at least, and in some others, Firefly. We did this, we talked to this guy. Oh, like in Firefly. And we had this on our ship, and our ship could do this, and this is the kind of jobs we did. Like in Firefly. How did the ship play? It looked like this, and the tech was like this, and tech was like this. And I'm like in Firefly. And suddenly, we weren't playing Epoch of Rysos anymore for certain parts of that game for me. We were playing Firefly. Yeah. And I didn't want to play that game.
And I didn't have that at all.
I didn't either. I played a military guy for you, Dan.
I know. I appreciate it.
I know you did.
Kiss ass.
Yep. I enjoy it.
One of the things that I have found helps mostly through my own mistakes of having screwed this up is a two-step process. One is keep it simple. If the setting, the culture, etc. is complex, strip it down to the bare minimum what's necessary for the game. If it's a sci-fi game, don't load them up with gadgets. And in the case of one of the things I screwed up, I gave them powered armor that had a feature list a mile long. Really only integrate what you absolutely must have to make this plot function.
Pat,
you
know, what was your piece of equipment in Sunday's game?
I had a crowbar.
No. Yeah.
No.
You had a lucky crowbar.
A lucky crowbar. And I wanted a flashlight and I couldn't get
it. Minimal, easily identifiable stuff. And then the second thing is do a tour. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is in the 5 minutes before the game starts, if you can't do this in 5 minutes, you've gotten too complex. Go around the table and say real quick, you have a sensor device on your character. This is the boundaries of what it can do in 30 seconds. You have a particle pistol. This is how powerful it is. Keep it simple. Give a quick tour. And I think that will help people understand the boundaries of what they're doing.
You're naked. You don't remember anything. You don't even know your name. You're naked. You don't remember anything. You don't even know your name. You're and that's the game we played on Sunday.
Yep.
But, you know, along those, not the naked lines, along your lines, Dan, I also say if it's not important to the plot, then it shouldn't be brought up. For example, yes. One of the big things this covers any sci-fi, whether it be a story, movie, whatever, I don't need to know how the engines work if they're not part of the plot. Yeah. They move at the speed of plot. In the course of your game, if you're never going to leave the ship, it's not important to know how the engines work.
Yes.
The Sunday game, the engines played a major part in the plot, but how they worked had nothing to do with it. Did you guys know how those engines worked?
No clue.
Did you know how?
I did.
But, big red button goes boom.
Yeah.
Did you know how the ship got from point A to point B? Was it faster than light? Did it fold space? Did you guys know any of that?
I assumed things, but we didn't know, and didn't need to know.
Guess what? I didn't know either, and I was running the damn game. I have no freaking clue. It wasn't important. It had nothing to do with the game. I think
that's where a lot of sci-fi, and actually some people that run one-shots fail, is that they spend time explaining things they don't need to. Mm-hmm. If you're running a one-shot and you give someone 3-4 pages of history, and some of this history is not going to play a part in the game, and it isn't necessary for their character's personality, they don't need to know it.
I think that some people will get hung up on that because they're trying to make sure that they give the players what they're going to need or anticipate what the character's going to ask. So I think that I would throw that out there to the players, being that that's more my perspective, is go into these one shots with a more open mind as players and don't get hung up on knowing everything about everything, or that you have this piece of equipment that does everything that needs to do. Just realize, this is a one-shot game. It's not a full-fleshed-out universe that we're going to be playing for more than this session or perhaps a couple sessions or something like that.
And similarly, have sort of a trickle mentality where if something becomes relevant, we'll deal with it when it becomes relevant. Yeah.
Yes.
We don't need to deal with it way in advance.
On sort of a last thing, one of the things that I really, really enjoy about one-shots, failure is an option.
Yeah.
And I try and put that in all of my one shots that I run, in all my con games that are all three of my con games that I'm going to run in my life here. In fact, in the newest one I just put out, Silent Memories, I put in there failure is an option in the description. And that means that in a normal campaign, there's challenges and you overcome challenges, and I want the players to succeed. The players ultimately want to succeed. You can have setbacks, and then you can overcome those setbacks. But ultimately, we're going to kind of win this thing, but let's just keep that on the down low. In a one-shot, you can fail.
Yeah.
There's the big bad. There's the MacGuffin. The dragon kidnapped the princess, and you have to slay the dragon. In a one-shot, you can have them go after that metaphorical dragon, and the dragon can eat the princess.
See,
and
the dragon can kill somebody in the group has the mission of feeding the princess to the dragon.
Yeah.
Somebody is going to fail, whether it be the traitor or the rest of the party.
Yeah. Well, and see, that just goes back to what we said at the beginning of, to me, mm-hmm. that just falls right in line with, this is something that I can try that I don't get to do all the time. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of those things. We can fail.
You guys.
And I'm not going to feel so bad because I didn't invest all this time. It's not a longstanding campaign. If we TPK, awesome.
To me, a sign of a wonderful game, and this is not easy to set up, but the sign of a wonderful game that just made my little black heart go pitter-patter was when I ran Inception at Gen Con, and they failed. They were so close to getting, because they were trying to get the password to this guy's computer, mathematical formula. They're trying to get a mathematical formula from this guy. They had worked the plan and came up with a plan, and obstacles came in the way, and they changed the plan, and they were fluid, and they were right there. They were so close, and it's like everything's collapsing down on them. The tension is so great, and they go to pull that final jingle piece, and the tower collapses. And then I said, the Mark wakes up, and you wake up, and you're all sitting in this basement looking at each other. Game ends. And they loved it. That's what really made it for me. Not the fact that they failed, but the fact that they failed and they were like, that game was great. We loved it. Oh my God, that was the greatest screw up in history. Yeah. And Sunday, did you guys fail or succeed?
I succeeded.
You did succeed.
Yeah, the traitor succeeded.
The traitor succeeded. Yeah, everybody else failed.
Well, and you know, the other cool thing about one-shots are your Inception game, for example, mm-hmm. you could be in a bar and a bunch of people are gathered together and say, hey, I'd like to play a game.
Yeah.
If you have a Jenga tower mm-hmm. in your car, you can run and grab it. You can play that there.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier for games like this weekend where we didn't have a Jenga tower mm-hmm. and you're grabbing notepaper and stuff. But you can do it on the spur of the moment.
Yeah.
You're not going to start a campaign in the middle of a... I guess someone could. I wouldn't want to start a campaign in the middle of a bar.
Depends on the bar.
Especially if you're visiting with people, you know, you have people in town you haven't seen in a while. Spur of the moment games are a lot easier to put together than
if I had a lot of money, didn't care about my weight, and had an iron liver, I would love to play in a bar.
Well, we contemplate that one. They were to go ahead and wrap this show up here. As always, check the show notes for all kinds of good stuff. We look forward to seeing all of you at Fear the Con 4. We hope you have great games, and we will catch you next time.
Dan, I'll see you on
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Is that really real? That's a new game.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2011. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.